Well, I think there's no doubt they were complimentary, so that's wonderful. We're now going to jump right over all that drought-stricken part of Canada and go all the way to the West Coast and hear from Professor Schreier.
Thank you. I'm neither an economist nor a policy wonk, so what you're going to get is a very simplistic scientific view on what a cost-efficient strategy should look like. I'm going to tell you a little bit about domestic agriculture and urban waste stuff, and then hopefully summarize it. It doesn't matter whether you think water is a commodity or a common good, it is far cheaper to have demand control than looking for new supplies. It is far cheaper to conserve than having more domestic water treatment. It is far cheaper to have source control than cost of wastewater treatment. It is far cheaper to compensate rather than protecting flood structures. It is much more efficient to infiltrate stormwater rather than remove it. And it's far more efficient to use green water than blue water. Everybody knows this. These are the consumption, domestic consumption in Canada for the various cities, about 300 liters per person per day. In Europe, it's about half. But what you probably don't know, small communities do something much more dramatic. Here's some mountain communities in the West. They use up to 1,800 liters per person per day. These are clearly the most water-consumptive populations anywhere in the world. How much do they pay for it? Some people pay 15 cents per cubic meter. That's equivalent to $4,000 of bottled water. We pay about 63 cents per cubic meter. If you go anywhere else, you will see this interesting graph. The red is how much we consume, and the blue is how much we pay. The Canadians consume the most and pay the least, and in Europe they pay the most and consume the least. So why don't we have a national strategy that every house should be metered? We meter everything else. How simple is that? Now, a big question. How many of you have actually watched the ice hockey gold medal game? Hands up. What has that to do with water? This is what the city had to do. Now, let me interpret this to you. This is after the first period, after the second period, after the third period. And then we went into overtime and everybody was scared shitless. Nobody went to the bathroom. But then you see this little bump there, and those are the guys who were drinking beer and couldn't hold it. But this is very serious. The city had to prepare water 3 days in advance for this event. Now, the city tells us our average flush is 15 liters per person. So, if we use 350 liters per person per day and we flush 105 liters, we're using a huge amount of water to disperse all these wonderful bacteria. Now, why don't we have a mandatory law across the Canada that every new house has to have low flush toilets with 3 and 6 liters? A few years ago in my house, I go 7 times, and when you get older, you go more. And I flushed 168 liters per day down the tube, and now I'm flushing 27, so I'm saving 147 liters. How difficult is it to get a policy going in this? How about outdoor water? Natalie Brumauer, one of my graduate students, just finished a study in the Okanagan. 50% of bacterial-free domestic water is used for watering lawns. How many of you like to cut lawns? If we would have roof water storage, we use it for gardening. If we would have at least a foot of topsoil before you roll out your turf, or if we would do xeriscaping, you could reduce this 50% to 10%. Massive savings. Why don't we do this? There are now some bylaws in Kelowna where they're requiring a foot of topsoil before you do any lawn development. So, From a domestic point of view, extremely easy. Meter everybody, 30% reduction. Low flush toilets, another 30% reduction. Outdoor water use reduction. How simple is that? Now we get to agriculture. Most of agriculture is flood irrigated. We need to start looking at efficient irrigation. What I'm showing you here is all the crops which are grown in the Okanagan, the driest watershed in Canada. And you can see every crop has a different water requirement. So what we actually should be doing is we should grow the most cost-effective crop, which is also the most water-efficient crop. If you do that, I come up with a new water value. If you look at these crops here, this is how much water they use per hectare, and this is actually the value they get out of the farm gate value in terms of water. So you can see the grapes, that's good news for all your wine drinkers, the grapes have the highest value. They use the least amount of water and they get the best benefit for it. So this is very primitive economics. Now, everybody tells you have an obesity problem, you should change your diet, don't eat as much meat, because meat is very water consumptive, but I put up all these kind of beverages which you drink, and I'm showing you how much water it takes. A cup of coffee takes about 147 liters of water to produce. So milk and coffee and apple juice, very highly water consumptive. So my advice to you, if you want to be water conservation minded, you either become a teetotaler or a beer drinker, and you know where my preference is. Now, when it comes to conservation, we need not only to conserve the domestic water, we need to conserve also in the wastewater. Now, the problem we have with water treatment is we need multi-barrier approaches. One system is no longer good enough. Chartier, Cryptosporidium, and so on doesn't do anything with chlorination. So as we go up and up and up with treatment, the cost is going exponentially up. So if we reduce the amount we generate, this would be much more cost effective. Just to give you kind of an idea how problematic this is, Natalie Pristachevsky, one of our students, just did this study here. In BC this year, we had 275 boil water alerts. And look at these two figures here. 148 have been in place for more than 5 years, and 64 have been in place for more than 10 years. So all these people tell you, oh, you've got a problem, boil your water. Think of the energy we use. And nobody ever goes into the watershed and says, let's fix the problem. So now we get to urban stormwater. What have we been doing traditionally? We have been draining everything. Get it out of the way as fast as possible. So what they're now saying, we should actually retain and detain it. And we need to do this at different scales. You can do a lot at the property scale, we have to do it at the neighborhood scales, and we also have to do it at the watershed scale. These are the kind of things you can do. They're so easy to do. If you start with a green roof or your roof water harvesting, or you do minimize impervious surfaces, build pervious pavements, have topsoil in your garden, have a rain garden, and plant some trees, you can reduce your stormwater runoff from your system probably by 90%. At the neighborhood level, you're going to have to deal with parking lots and with roads. There you do something else. You infiltrate all the stuff. You build wetlands to detain it. And at the watershed level, you have to do something else. I'm showing you a couple of examples of this. We build wetlands in the city for stormwater management because it's the best filtering system and the best water storage system. We built now roads with no curbs and gutters. The water runs off into sand filters, which means it cleans up the water, it detains it, you don't have too much flooding. We built parking lots where all the crud from the parking lot goes into sand filters, and we built, had to go all the way to Bolivia to find a driveway like that. Typically what we do is we put everything into channels and water can only go up. Therefore, we need to do something else. We need to start dedicating certain areas in parks and agricultural areas where we deliberately store the flood water. And so these things are so easy to do, I don't know why we don't have leadership in this area. So in summary, we need mandatory metering nationally. We need conservation because it's the most cost-efficient way to go. We have low-impact design studies now which show a lot of innovations to reduce stormwater, but the economists need to help us a little bit to show how much cost-effective that stuff is. We need to rethink the treatment cost of drinking water and wastewater, and we need green water management. And the reason why we need to do that is because we're in for some wonderful times. This is what happens in the last 4 years in Vancouver. We had a big storm. The whole city was on boil water alert for 3 weeks. Followed by that, we have a snowstorm where 200 people had no power for 5 days. Then we had the windstorm in Stanley Park, which decapitated 3,000 people. Then we had a snowstorm. Sorry. Decapitated 3,000. That's a good one. And then we had the snowstorm over Christmas where no planes came in for 3 days. Then we had the highest temperature last summer. Then we had 26 out of 30 days of rain in November. And guess what? You heard the Olympics. We had the two warmest months ever recorded in Vancouver. Isn't that a wake-up call for all of us to start doing something? Thank you very much.